It's officially 2026, and my New Year's resolution is to prioritize high-quality pieces in my wardrobe. Thanks to Quince, I can already check that off my list. I'm already planning outfits around my new cotton Oxford shirt. It's such a classic, timeless piece that I know I'll be rewearing all year. Need more than just a wardrobe update? Quince has tons of options for the home as well. Maya has had the same dinnerware since college and has finally decided it's time for a refresh, starting with a gorgeous set of ceramic cake plates. Refresh your wardrobe with Quince. Don't wait. Go to quince.com/rehash for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/rehash to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/rehash.
Hello.
Hey, Hannah.
Hi, Mia. What's up?
We just ate a little pastry. It was quite literally, like, when you think of a little French pastry, that's what it was.
I know. It felt like out of a cartoon because it didn't really look like anything, but then it was something.
It was a little pink bulb with, like, some lavender leaves on the top, some little lavender petals on the top.
Yummy. Self-care. Who are you?
I'm Maya. I'm a YouTuber. And that's all I've got going on for me.
That's not true. She's many things. She's a great friend.
I can be such a bitch sometimes.
She works out every morning.
Oh my god.
It's impressive.
You'd be a great matchmaker.
Yeah, whoever wants to date Maya, send us an email.
Ew, I'm becoming such a pathetic loser. Just like writing about my dating woes in my Substack. And now my official persona is just sad loser.
Oh my god, and that's not true. Also, like, it's resonating.
I guess all women are sad losers is what I've realized about this.
You heard it here first.
I'm just kidding. We've all been hard done by.
Oh.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding again. It was a joke.
She's so cool. She's awesome.
I don't care about anything. I'm just vibing all the time. Who are you?
I'm Hannah.
She's single and doesn't care.
Yeah, okay, there. That's basically, I'm not even a YouTuber. I'm just single and I don't care. And this is Rehash, a podcast about the social media phenomenons that strike a nerve in our culture, only to be quickly forgotten, but we think are due for a revisiting. This season is all about internet archetypes and the many, many lives they've lived. If you like our show and want to hear more from us, you should support us on Patreon at patreon.com/rehashpodcast. This is where we have monthly bonus episodes, weekly mini-sodes, and early access to our regular programming. If you don't want to join the Patreon, feel free to rate and review us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. We love it when you do that. It is fun.
But you should join the Patreon because we're really funny on there.
Yeah, it's really, really fun.
You think Cumtown is funny? Well, you're in for a shock.
Oh yeah, all we talk about is how women...
All women are sad losers.
Yeah. Oh, I guess you got that on the main feed.
I posted that on main. Guys, I don't think all women are sad losers. I should just say it now. I just gotta get that on the record.
Three immortal words captivated the culture at the beginning of 2021.
What are they?
Gaslight, gatekeep, girl boss. Over the next 3 weeks, we will be unraveling each of these words, their histories, and the people and events that embody them. This week, I'm going to start us off with Gaslight and how it was taken from the vault of classic cinema and projected into pop psychology stardom.
Ooh.
I want to give a quick just content warning because we will be talking about domestic abuse and like sexual assault. Just a heads up. It's important to establish the idea that there are two different working definitions of gaslight today. So one which describes like a form of emotional abuse in which one party undermines the sanity of another by intentionally distorting their sense of reality. So This is done through things like questioning, like, the victim's version of events and trivializing their feelings and, like, denying the existence of, like, past events, refusing to listen, etc. And then there's the other definition, which sees the word as, like, a sort of shorthand for being blatantly misled or, like, sometimes even just disagreed with. So we're going to look at how the first definition was broadened through its use in popular culture and, like, spawned the second, as well as Gaslight's new life as a meme. But first, I know you know the answer to this, Maya. Could you give us, like, a brief idea of where Gaslight came from?
Okay, I watched that movie so long ago. Let me tell you, I learned about what gaslighting was a very long time ago. My mom and I used to sit down on Saturdays and we used to watch marathons on Turner Classic Movies when I was in high school.
Cultured.
Because I was a fucking loser.
Oh, I was going to say you're smart and cool.
But I'm also really cultured.
Date her.
We came upon a movie one day. It's an Ingrid Bergman movie from, I think, 1947.
44.
Whoa.
Yeah.
1944, called Gaslight. And the movie is called Gaslight because of a specific instance in the movie in which a gaslight is turned on and off. I guess you'll be describing it to us, Hannah. And ever since then, the word has kind of taken off into the vernacular, which is so funny because there was a lot of time in history where the word wasn't actually used between when the movie came out and now in the internet age. And so it was always funny to me the fact that people were using this word so ubiquitously when it had actually stemmed from this pretty fun psychological thriller.
You were ahead of the curb.
So I was actually really ahead of the curb.
So Gaslight, it was a play first, written by Patrick Hamilton. It came out in 1938. And then it was adapted first into a British film and then the American Gaslight, which I think is the version people are most familiar with. So I'm going to synopsize that because that's the one I've seen.
I guess because it had that Ingrid Bergman star power is why it kind of popped right off.
Yeah, it was nominated for a bunch of Oscars. It's also, like, American film.
Baby Angela Lansbury.
Oh, yeah.
And that lady's always been old.
The film follows Paula, played by Ingrid Bergman, who is an opera singer whose new husband, Gregory, convinces her to move into the London home where her aunt was murdered. Paula is distressed living in the house after a number of strange occurrences, like brooches and paintings are disappearing and then reappearing, and her new maid, played by Angela Lansbury, treats her weird.
Baby Angela. Oh, who's kind of like a whore.
Yeah.
She's like an early whore.
An early whore. She treats her weirdly, like she's kind of crazy. And so, like, Paula just becomes more and more anxious, and she's convinced that she's unwell, and she becomes socially isolated and, like, rarely leaves the house. And then we later learn that her new husband, Gregory, is the one who killed her aunt in an attempt to steal her jewels. And then, wait, I forgot to mention. So, yeah, there's a gaslight also that dims when he leaves the house. And that's also why she feels crazy.
It's in her bedroom when she's, like, kind of, like, locked up there going to
bed.
And
she's like, oh. And he's like, you're crazy.
Oh, she's so good in that movie. She's so good.
She won
the
Oscar.
She has the most mournful face I've ever seen.
Yeah. In order to bring Paula to a mental state where Gregory is, like, able to go on with his search, he intentionally breaks her down and by making her think she's crazy, and that's why he does all the stuff with, like, the brooches and the gaslight and the paintings and everything,
so that she's, like, emotionally and psychologically dependent on him.
Yeah,
basically.
Exactly. That is the plot of the movie Gaslight.
And it's a great movie. I loved it.
Yeah. And as sometimes happens with, like, major pop cultural events, you know, this film's subject matter must have triggered some discussion in the zeitgeist, because there are instances of the film's name being used in descriptions of abuse as early as the 1940s. It's like articles referring to it as, like, the gaslight treatment. In these cases, though, the word gaslight is a noun. It's directly referencing the movie or play.
It's like a cultural reference more than like an actual word.
Yes. Yeah. It's not unlike the way we would say things like, I'm in my Fleabag era, to mean we're, like, messy in a place of our life, or we're in a messy place in our lives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, we're going villain mode.
Yeah.
We're going beast mode.
Can you think of any other examples?
Like when people say they need Kleenex instead of a tissue?
No, not actually.
Okay, let me think of another one. like when something's kind of absurd and nonsensical and like bureaucratic, people are like, how very Kafka-esque.
Yeah, basically. So
but
you're
I stand by the Kleenex thing.
From a linguistic standpoint, you are wrong, but I respect it.
Sometimes you just gotta be wrong.
The gaslight that we use now is not a noun. It's actually an innovative denominal verb. And I'm sorry because I'm going to get all like linguistics-y. A denominal verb is one which comes from a noun that was then verbified. So they're like an efficient shorthand for explaining the actions that take place around the noun. So instead of saying the rain is pouring, you say it's raining. This happens to a lot of everyday activities, like going to sleep becomes sleeping or sending an email is emailing. But gaslighting is more unique than those above examples because it's not referring to something that we would necessarily have like the cultural context at hand to understand. That's why there are countless articles on Google titled, "What is gaslighting?"
Because the movie is not so ubiquitous as to have entered the cultural zeitgeist in this kind of way. Like, it's not that popular of a movie. Maybe back in 1944, but like, there have been many years since then.
Well, yeah, the fact that it became popular in the 21st century feels very strange, but it isn't actually a product of the 21st century, this denominal verb version. So linguist Ben Zimmer found early uses of gaslight, the verb, in a sitcom from the 1960s.
Whoa.
Where the film is being referenced, but also to gaslight is understood as a kind of action.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So this means there was like enough of a commonplace understanding of what that meant for it to be written for mass audiences because it's sitcoms.
Was it the Brady Bunch? Because I bet that bitch Marsha was gaslighting Jan.
No. I think one was from the Lucy show. I can't remember what the other ones were.
Was Desi gaslighting Lucille? Oh, I bet Lucy was gaslighting Desi, actually.
I think they were talking about, they were like, we're going to gaslight our boss or something. They're doing like psychological warfare. But it was also like used as a verb in academic articles as early as the mid 20th century. So this is where we see gaslight receiving its original definition that I mentioned earlier. It's no longer just describing behavior which mimics the events of the films, but it is a behavior itself, which is like this version of emotional abuse. It does eventually rise in popularity, and I don't know exactly why gaslight had like the breakout success that it did. There's no clear-cut answer. So in 2000...
Gaslight, the verb.
Yes. In 2007, psychologist Robin Stern published the book The Gaslight Effect, which speaks to what she calls a gaslight epidemic faced by women. And this is 2007. So some point to this book as being responsible for popularizing the phrase, but 2007 feels too early to me.
Maybe, but like I think it could have been entered there as a contribution into what is a very organic evolution of a word.
That's what I think. I think it sparked a domino effect that made it, you know, on some people's minds so that it would surface later on.
Yeah, it like planted a seed so that people could go back and reference something actually tangible using the verb.
Yeah, definitely. So it properly entered the popular lexicon in the mid to late 2010s. I tried to see if there was like a specific text or instance which caused this. Like sometimes you'll see it written one place and then it takes off, but it looks like it was a combination of a few different events. So at first I want to ask, I guess you sort of answered this, but do you remember when you first heard the word?
I would have been like 20 or something. My friend Nico was in this student film and he was like, I'm playing a guy who like gaslights his girlfriend. And I was like, what the fuck is gaslight? I was like, wait, are you talking about the movie? And he was like, no, what is that? And he didn't know what I was talking about. And then he was like, no, it's just where I'm lying to my girlfriend a lot and like making her feel like she's crazy. And I was like, oh, fascinating.
Oh, that is interesting. Okay, you have an actual tangible answer.
That's kind of what I remember. Maybe I had heard it slightly before that, but that's my knowledge.
I think I heard it for the first time. It might have been like I was acting in something and the word was used and I was like, what is that word? And then I looked it up, but it was probably around like 2017, 2016 or something. I was late to the game.
So it's all like film acting related.
Yeah, actors.
You learn a lot.
Yeah. Anyways. But Caleb Madison at The Atlantic cites two important events that helped propel the word into mainstream use. Mm-hmm. So the Me Too movement and the Trump presidency.
Which, oh, again, funny enough, Trump.
I know, we did just talk about that. I also think each of these examples represents the two like different meanings that gaslight occupies. Maya, would you be able to spark people's memory about the Me Too movement?
Oh, God. You love asking me to summarize these massive, amorphous social movements. No, I can do it. I love when you ask me to do this. Back in like 2016, 2017, there started to be a wave of women online feeling more empowered to talk about the way that like rape culture exists in our society and has been so very normalized to the extent that we don't even see it sometimes. Initially, the word Me Too was used by a woman, an activist and writer, I believe, named Tarana Burke. She used it to discuss her history with sexual assault years before this had even happened. And then in 2017, Alyssa Milano came out and used the hashtag Me Too on Twitter.
Yeah, I think so. And it was like, oh, tomorrow, everyone who's experienced like sexual assault, I'm going to
hashtag Me Too. Yeah. On your, so like people on Facebook, because I remember we're still using Facebook at that point. Like a lot of people I saw on Facebook were doing the hashtag on their walls. And it kind of took off from there, which triggered a wave of women in Hollywood coming out against powerful figures like Harvey Weinstein. I think Bill Cosby, although I think his case murmurings of it had started happening before, because Hannibal Buress kind of brought it to mainstream attention again. Like, people had been talking about Bill Cosby's abuse allegations for years, but Hannibal Buress kind of brought it again into the fore.
Yeah, and I would also say, like, Dylan Farrow had penned an open letter to Woody Allen a few years before, like 2015 or something, after he won like a Lifetime Achievement Award.
Not a few years, I think. Yeah, it was like a year or two before it happened. Basically talking about the fact that she had been abused by her father, Woody Allen, for years growing up. Yeah, it all kind of happened all at once and in tandem with each other. And it kind of felt like a domino effect of all these things. The Me Too hashtag had also kind of come out around a similar time that Harvey Weinstein was also facing a whole bunch of allegations from women in Hollywood about his very systemic abuse in the industry, which led to a wider conversation of all these different men in Hollywood who have been abusing their power for years, because Hollywood is seen as this like meritocracy when in fact like men are the power holders in it, and they hold the gates, they are the gatekeepers, they hold the keys to success in that industry in a way that women can't have access to. So that also led to a discussion, which led to greater discussions around rape culture on the ground in like more grassroots ways. And it just triggered this like widespread discussion about the abuse of women.
Yeah.
Worldwide, basically.
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely. And then I think there were these celebrity faces that like sort of, because celebrities have this power, allowed like everyday people to feel like they could
do this. But it's important not to forget that Tarana Burke, who is a Black woman, started this phrase.
Yes. Yeah.
And she is the source behind all of that. So yeah, that's the best way I can put it.
No, you agree.
My timeline's a little messy, but yeah.
I mean, I love putting her on the spot. It's like a pop quiz here. Yeah. So like these high profile stories sparked a larger conversation about our tendencies also up until that point to discount women when they came forward. It's not like women hadn't been coming forward about experiences with high profile men, but it was like this large wave where we couldn't ignore it. It was such a clear pattern in front of us.
Yeah, we reflected on a lot of these maligned women in like history, basically, who had been mistreated in the media for their own kind of abuse and the way that it got turned onto them. It also led to a discussion about like how unfair the court system is when you try to litigate this issue.
Yeah. And you could also just see instances of gaslighting in the stories these women would tell, because you'd have these very famous women explaining why they didn't come forward for all these years. And it was because there were people telling them, you know, they wouldn't be believed, or like
it wasn't that big of a deal.
Yeah. Make them doubt their experiences. And it also pushed a lot of women to examine incidents in their own lives, which qualified as abusive, but for various reasons were never honored that way. I think a lot of us reckoned with the ways that we had either convinced ourselves or like been convinced that experiences that left us with a bad taste in our mouths were,
to say the least,
not necessarily consensual. I think the Me Too movement kind of gets downplayed now because every time something happens that feels like an obvious thing, like it feels obvious that we would have that kind of culture, we dismiss the actual effect that it had.
Well, I think it's kind of become like a joke.
Yeah.
In some ways, because the second anything becomes too big or too overarching or too
earnest.
Too earnest and too like powerful in a way, like semantically and culturally powerful.
Yeah.
It feels like people are initially going to turn against it. Again, we talk about the Cometown guys in the last episode. Like, they constantly make fun of that. The Red Scare girls call it a sexual jihad. Like, it's become a thing to poke fun at because it's so earnest. Although, there are instances in which Me Too has... I've talked about this in my accountability culture video. Like, the way that it has been kind of co-opted by the right. And also, in ways that we... It's the way that people have sought justice within the Me Too movement has been a very distinctly neoliberal phenomenon. The way that we seek justice through the court system... You can agree or disagree with that. That's just my opinion.
It's such a complicated thing because the part of me that really, really cares about the way the court system should be operated and like the kind of standards that we have for that versus like the part of me that is a woman that does feel
like it's unfair.
Yeah. Like, and there's just like such an emotional element to it, but it's like hard.
The victims' rights movement has not necessarily been good for seeking justice.
Yes.
And that sounds antithetical to what the victims' rights movement is for, but we won't get into it here. Maybe we'll talk about it in a later episode. But I like sometimes when I think about people making fun of Me Too, like I think about that movie Bombshell, where they like place a focus on like the women of Fox News getting abused in the workplace, and it just something about it felt off. Like no women should be sexually abused in the workplace.
No, of course not. But we're talking about Megyn Kelly and like Gretchen Carlson, where I'm like, I don't know, they're obviously they are entitled to their justice in that sense, and then at the same time you're like, I don't really want you to be the face of this.
Well, it's because like Me Too got absorbed from maybe its more leftist origins to being kind of this like unpolitical thing. Yeah. Which is really bizarre.
I know, and it's like there's something interesting about violence against women and like sexual violence becoming apolitical because we understand that it's something that everyone experiences, but then at the same time like it doesn't really feel like something you can extract from politics.
What's also like I think of when Michelle Wolf did the White House Correspondents' Dinner roast and she made fun of Sarah Huckabee Sanders ungodly eyeshadow, and everyone on the right and even on the left were like, how dare you make fun of another woman.
Oh, Samantha Bee had to apologize for calling Ivanka Trump the C-word.
Which I'm like, say it with your whole chest.
I'm just like, come on. Sally Field did have a great tweet, though. She was like, those are way too warm and like welcoming to describe Ivanka Trump.
Oh, true. But yeah, again, it's like, I think the second anything enters the mainstream vernacular, even though of course it should be mainstream to be against sexual abuse, like that's not a partisan issue, but the way the language of it has been used, we talked about in our Try Guys episode, yeah, has been used in opposite ways, it feels a little
yeah,
it makes it an easy target.
I know, it's hard because again, like going back to this, I do think that it opened up a larger discussion about like our popular definitions of abuse or assault as well, which we have like a tendency to reserve for more extreme cases, at least I think before the Me Too movement. And specifically in regards to abuse, like this felt like the first time we as a culture were making space to talk about psychological abuse and like how it can be damaging even if it's not in tandem with physical violence. We were only really taking things seriously if it was, this is just clearly rape, or this is just clearly physical domestic violence, and we just weren't regarding the smaller ways that women can be like oppressed by men.
Well, the whole argument is why it started is the fact that rape culture is a culture. Like, yeah, we live in a culture of rape culture. It exists all over in every way. It seeps into every facet of our daily lives. It's, yeah, not just like an instance of violent rape. It's that and many other things, and there's a spectrum of it.
And so gaslight as a word came up in these conversations because it was one of the many ways that like women can be abused by men. And I think that the word kind of took off because a lot of people saw their experiences in that word, and I think it's a very specific word, and when you hear a word that you can articulate something you've been through for the first time, like I understand why you would gravitate to that word. Mm-hmm. And then Happening around the same time as this was the Trump presidency, in which it was commonplace to say that we were like living in a post-truth world. So people called this political gaslighting, the way he would say one thing to our face, even though we knew the opposite was true. The way that the news media was like constantly shelling out lies to people, having someone go on like Fox News and just be like, actually, this is the truth because the president said it's the truth and it doesn't matter what kind of like facts.
If I say this loud enough and monotone enough, it'll be real.
Yeah. So yeah, from the get-go, like Trump had his press secretary, John Spicer, lying about how big the crowd was. Like that happened, I think, within the first month of his presidency.
Yo, Sean Spicer called. These are all names that I'm like, whoa.
I know, throwback. And yeah, we could see pictures that it was a really pathetically small crowd, but they were like, this is the biggest crowd ever. Whatever, we all remember. And it was so blatantly untrue that he would later like participate in a gag at the Emmys parodying it, where he was like, this is the biggest Emmys ever. It's like, even the people that are lying to you, they know they're lying to you. Mm-hmm. I think embodies the second definition of gaslighting, mainly because I don't think it was done with like the intentions of breaking the nation down, but it was more just like a
stupid... making them codependent.
It was just like a stupid fucking lie.
Yeah, it's just lying.
Yeah, it was just like, what? And I think that the blatant lying like made way for a culture of manipulation within that administration.
You know what? We do laugh about how like it wasn't actually about breaking the public down and making them codependent, but like Trump's followers were very much manipulated and preyed upon, a lot of them, you know, so in a way, kind of, you could stretch that argument into that territory because they were kind of brainwashed. But I don't know if that's the same as gaslighting. I would say that's brainwashing.
Here's the thing is, like, overall, the people that believe the version of reality that Trump and Fox presented to them, like, they believe them because they consider that to be the truth. And, like, they believe them to be the arbiters of truth.
Yeah, they don't believe it to be a truth about themselves that is a negative truth about themselves. It was all kind of, like, positive truths about themselves and negative truths about the other.
Yeah, you know? So, like, it was manipulative, but they were already looking to them as, like, valid sources of information.
Totally.
It doesn't feel like gaslighting because their versions of reality were not being shattered. They're just being validated by these forces. And then the people who didn't believe them weren't being gaslit because they weren't going to give them that power.
Like, they were like... that's a lie.
Yeah, like, what are you saying? So I do think this is where we start talking about gaslighting, is just you're saying the truth, someone's saying that's not true. It's not without the specific intentions of like having you feel like reality,
upending your reality.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they had other intentions. They were manipulating people with other gains in mind, but it just wasn't quite the same as trying to make you feel like you were completely crazy.
Well, because every lie has a purpose of swaying the person that you're lying to into one truth or another, but that doesn't make it gaslighting.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it was this looser conception of the term that was being passed around that would later lead to what is called semantic bleaching. In the online sphere, we see a lot of words undergo semantic bleaching. So semantic bleaching is what happens when a word is taken from its original context and then it loses its intended meaning. So I love this term. I think it describes such a common but frustrating phenomenon. The word literally is a very famous example of this. So we use literally to mean figuratively.
Oh, that's such a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. People are constantly making fun of me for that in my videos, on my comments. They're always like, you say literally, but that is not what literally means.
Which is really lame because I think it's so commonplace to do that now.
That's literally so lame.
It's literally so lame.
Literally.
It's a lost cause. So people who are really fighting for, you know, literally to retain its like dignity need to get a job.
My political theory professor would have been so mad about that word.
Oh, my dad gives me a hard time about it. We also see it happen a lot to words which start out in Black online spaces. So words like woke or cancel are two really popular examples right now. They both started as Black slang, but they were eventually co-opted and misused by the right wing.
And misused by the right wing, but also just co-opted and misused by like white people.
But I think that is sort of how the progression goes, right? It becomes more mainstream to use them.
Yeah. And then it gets co-opted by the right wing.
Yeah, they go in and then by that point, they're so loud about it that, like, the right wing now has been able to redefine it because they're using the word so aggressively.
Yeah.
But it happens a lot to academic language in psychology terms like gaslight. So one that really bothers me is emotional labor.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, so...
the pop psychology of it all.
And yeah, and I mean, emotional labor is an idea in sociology, and it refers to the requirement of emotional regulation within job settings.
Mm.
So, for example, anyone in the service industry is likely performing emotional labor as part of their jobs. So, pretending to be friendly with somebody or keeping up a happy face, regardless of how you're feeling, like you have to present a certain kind of emotional state to people. And I mean, you've worked your fair share of service jobs.
Ew.
Yeah, I'm sure you have experience with this.
I had not one shred of ability to... I can't hide my emotions in any context or setting. So if someone was rude to me, I would be such a bitch back to them.
Always? Really?
Oh, every time I got in trouble so often. Obviously, I'd be like sycophantic and be like, can I help you to your seat? To some horrible old woman. But like, usually I like could not hide it at all. It really made me realize a lot about myself because I didn't think I was like so unable to regulate myself. But here we are.
I'm not great at like regulating how I feel about somebody. If I have a customer I don't like, they're kind of going to get a pretty good idea of the fact that I don't like them. But I do find myself in the position a lot. You know, if you're working by yourself behind a bar, like I've had full panic attacks that I've had to serve people through where I'm like, there's nothing I can do about this. Or I hurt my back recently at work and I had to just kind of pretend I was okay.
Well, also at minimum wage jobs, I'm just being expected to be so overly friendly to people when I'm not in the mood.
Oh,
even if they aren't being rude to me, it's just exhausting in general.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's like genuinely to the detriment of my mental health.
Totally.
Have had to like put on a happy face, and I'm not an outgoing person. I don't like it.
You wonder why so many people do coke in the restaurant industry. It's to get through shift with all these bitches coming in, sitting at your tables and being so annoying.
But in recent years,
can we split the bill 8 ways?
Oh, that is us sometimes.
That's us every time.
By
these bitches, I mean us.
In recent years, it has taken on a different definition, which describes the work that mainly women perform within relationships as emotional caretakers for their partners. So I've definitely seen things online where girls talk about all the money they would have made if they were charging their boyfriends for the free therapy they gave them.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the way that people use it in friend situations, too.
Oh,
like, it's
that,
horrible.
There was that weird... it was like a message that you could copy and paste that was going around that was like, I'm actually at capacity right now and I don't have the energy to do the emotional labor to help you out. And it was like something you could copy and paste
and send
to a friend who was like...
the internet has really empowered us all to be so selfish, and it's crazy. I remember there was this guy I was friends with in school, and I remember he had come to the school with a bunch of people he had gone to high school with, and they were at a party once, and he was talking to this girl who they kind of lost touch a bit over the year, but they were really close in high school, and he was going through a really dark period of his life, and he was kind of just telling her about it because she asked him how he was. And in the middle of doing it, she got up and she was like, I actually can't do the emotional labor of this, like, go get a therapist, and walked away. And he was like,
God.
What the yeah. Obviously, I understand people kind of dumping their issues on you, but at the same time, trauma dumping, that's another one I would use that people have really taken out of context and used it to just justify being selfish and awful.
But then it's also like, I understand I've had people talking about breakups where they're like, I was performing a lot of emotional labor.
And of course,
I think especially with women, there's an expectation if you're in like a heterosexual relationship that you're going to be carrying a certain amount of weight as far as like taking care of your partner, because I mean, we are raised to be more emotionally intelligent.
Totally. And also, yeah, the amount of times I've been someone's rebound where I have to like kind of walk them through the early grieving stages of a breakup is so like, it's happened so often in my life.
Yeah.
And honestly, like, yeah, it's not fun, especially if things don't last with that person, but at the same time, it is kind of like just being a human being. If someone's going through a rough period, I don't like how much men rely on women to be like emotional vessels. And I do think a lot of guys, even that I know in my personal life, will only talk to the women in their life when they're in a bad period and not talk to them the second that they get a girlfriend or the second that they're, you know, whatever, in a good place.
Or you have a conversation with a guy where they're really opening up to you in a way where you realize, oh, you don't have these conversations with your male friends.
Men.
Like, you are saving it for these kinds of moments.
They'll reveal, like, the craziest secrets to you and you're like, whoa.
And you're like, this is...
And it's something that I notice and it bothers me, but it doesn't bother me enough to just kind of drop that person in the moment because I don't know, maybe I have like a nurturing side where I just want to, maybe I'm just a really good person. I don't know. No, but I like to listen to people and like I want to be there for them. It actually makes me feel good to be there for them, even if sometimes it's a bit much or if there's an imbalance.
Well, I also just
think, me personally,
I think, while obviously there's the gendered aspect of just how, you know, boys and girls are raised to deal with their emotions and, you know, articulate their emotions. But ultimately, like, it's not necessarily like a systemic gendered thing. It's more of about relationship dynamics. Mm-hmm. So it feels strange to take this word that like really articulates an actual experience that, you know, a lot of workers have to go through, the idea of emotional labor. And I don't know, it just really bothers me that it was taken, like it's such a useful term, mm-hmm. and that it doesn't really mean the same thing it does. And then when you talk about emotional labor, people think you're talking about a completely different thing.
And it's a buzzword that elicits like an immediate eye roll at this point, at least for me. Whenever I hear someone say it, I'm like, shut up, totally. You know, but it sucks because yeah, the word has utility.
Emotional labor is something that I'm struggling with right now in my own work.
Yeah, it's exhausting.
It feels exhausting. And yeah, it just then does become cringe to refer to it, I suppose.
Again, sometimes these phrases are good, but sometimes it's good to just describe the feeling instead of using a phrase. Even though it's useful to have a phrase to label certain situations, at this point it's like describing the specificity of the situation might be more helpful to people at this point.
Yeah, because the word itself is like, it's just lost its power.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in the case of gaslighting, I understand the urge to universalize it. Like, it's certainly more catchy than saying someone lied to your face, but it diminishes the impact for people who have actually experienced gaslighting as a form of abuse. I mean, this goes back to our West Elm Caleb episode, where the girls that weren't actually being manipulated or like abused by this man.
Oh, love bombing. Sorry, I just thought of another pop psychology term.
Yeah, these women were using gaslighting to describe him when really it was just they were being lied to. So he wasn't being upfront with his intentions.
Yeah, and they weren't living two of the same reality as each other.
Yeah, exactly. And unfortunately, like, it leads to a bit of a boy cried wolf situation where people who actually have experienced it and like want to speak about their experiences do feel embarrassed the same way you said, you know, you would roll your eyes at the use of like emotional labor because
you've
heard it so many times. It's just been watered down.
It's been done. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been done.
It's been done. And now the word is kind of a joke. So
that sucks.
Yeah. As I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, gaslight was first properly memeified when it was used in Gaslight Gatekeep Girl Boss. It's a parody of Live Laugh Love, and it appeared on Tumblr in early 2021.
Ugh, I miss Live Laugh Love. Those are the simpler times. We were really just trying to live, laugh, and love.
I also think that like that's like a pretty great mantra to live by. Like, why are we tearing that down? We really should laughing. Live, laugh, and love more,
and think in cursive the way that does.
Aww. Do you remember where you first saw like Gaslight Gatekeep Girl Boss?
No, I have no idea. It like definitely has been so ubiquitous on the internet. I have no clue.
Yeah, I feel like I definitely saw it probably on TikTok.
It's like constantly hiding in little corners and then I find it and I'm like, ugh.
Because it was like,
again,
I think it came out around the time everyone was like, girl boss, too close to the sun. And like, there's all these different.
Yeah.
So these three words, they've all become oversaturated in their use in the last few years to the point that they're used more like as ironic words than like sincere ones.
Because the joke is, look at how often this word is used. That's the entire joke of Gaslight Gatekeep Girl Boss.
Really. Yeah. And it's often used in reference to people like Elizabeth Holmes or fictional characters like Amy Dunn from Gone Girl, who like, I think in some ways represent mainstream feminism in its darkest interpretations.
Well, people have referred to Gaslight as a good for her movie. Isn't that insane?
That girl does nothing. Like, she doesn't.
She's very helpless in that movie. At the very end, she gets saved by someone else.
That's so weird.
Yeah, it's really fucking weird. And also, yeah, good for her.
Well, it's the same way Midsommar gets, like, linked in there. And I'm like, that is about a woman being broken down by a cult.
That one makes a bit more sense because it's this heightened kind of allegory. Like, it's a parable for women. Like, some people have read it as a parable for women. And the same as Gone Girl, like, they can be read as parables. This was, like, a literal story about a woman being abused, and that's the whole story. Like, there's no heightened, like, metaphor. There's nothing. That's just what's happening the entire time.
I guess she gets a different man in the end, so good for her.
But he saves her, like...
Yeah, it's like these women who have perverted the allowances of female empowerment so they can commit acts of evil. Do you have any favorite female manipulators? Lana Del Rey, but like, it's her music, but people always put her in there.
Who's the lady from Hit the Road, Jack? Hit the Road, Jack. Is she a female manipulator?
I don't know.
Or has she been wrong and hard done by?
Is that a movie?
What? The song, Hit the Road, Jack.
And don't you come back no more, no more.
Why are we singing completely different
key? I thought it was harmonizer.
Are we?
I don't know.
Let's try again.
Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more, no more. No,
it's gone. It's gone. Anyways, no, that's not it. Let me think of someone. I want to say Jennifer's Body, but since we saw it on a list, I'm really leaning towards Aquamarine.
Yeah, we looked up some Letterboxd lists. Someone had the Cersei. Sound of Music.
Or Medusa? Is she a female manipulator?
I don't know. I feel like, no, that doesn't count because she's using her snakes to her advantage.
The Sirens from the Odyssey. That's the OG. Toxic femininity at its best.
Someone had Pearl, but I'm thinking, I'm like, Pearl's not really manipulating.
She's just mentally ill. Like,
yeah, same with Carrie. I don't know.
Carrie is not manipulating anyone. She's just killing them.
She's manipulating fire with her brain.
So the fire is like a victim of Carrie's gaslighting and manipulation.
She's quite literally gaslighting the gym on fire.
Gaslighting has gone too far.
You know who is a gaslighter is Carrie's mother. Because she's like, Carrie, you're going to hell for getting your period. Girls don't get their period.
I mean, she believes that, though. So, again, it's the truth. So
she's gaslit. I mean, this is just some random girls' letterbox list, but Marie Antoinette? Lady Bird? Clueless?
Oh, the play it as it lays Maria character. So manipulative.
Juno? John Tucker Must Die. That is an actual female manipulator movie.
Yeah, that's also a Good for Her movie. That is the original Good for Her movie, and no one talks about that enough.
It's so true.
Like, it literally is Good for Her.
So, obviously, like, these words were picked because they all begin with G, but I do think through this meme, we've seen gaslight, like, take on a third stage of meaning, where a word that overwhelmingly refers to the abuse of women by men is now being attributed to, like, a form of evil femininity.
Yeah.
So we talk about it in relation to female manipulators like Aquamarine, or Good for Her narratives like Aquamarine.
Because that evil mermaid bitch.
She made him think she had legs and she doesn't really. She
doesn't have legs. Cinderella's also a female manipulator because she made him think that she had money and she didn't. And she was not wearing real glass slippers.
Oh my god, so true.
When you think your girlfriend lives in a carriage, but really she lives in a pumpkin.
Oh my god.
She was just living in that carriage.
She lives in a pumpkin.
I said that so confidently.
And she's tiny.
When your boyfriend thinks it's Thumbelina too. Wait, does she grow?
Thumbelina?
Does Thumbelina lie about being fun size when she's actually...
I think she's always tiny, from my recollection.
Oh, Ariel. Ariel told everyone she had legs and she didn't have legs.
And, well, she couldn't, like, didn't tell anyone because she couldn't talk.
So what we're realizing is mermaids are all manipulators.
Sirens.
Sirens.
So, anyways, in all seriousness, the idea of a hot female psychopath is way more sexy and alluring than the bleak realities of domestic abuse. It's the same as how we obsess over horrific murders or, like, prolific serial killers, but don't bat an eye when a woman is killed by her husband. And maybe as women, it's easier to pretend that we live in a world where we can be the perpetrators of harm than to be, like, crushingly aware of our realities as sitting ducks for the abuses of men. I think this is why we are drawn to, like, these figures and the idea of something like gaslighting, which on the surface looks like something we at least know we could be capable of if we try.
Definitely. Many women are capable of gaslighting.
Yeah. It doesn't require, like, physical strength, only wits. I'm not saying that we, like, want to be abusers and we're, like, out there looking for men to manipulate, but I do think that we find comfort in the idea that that is a weapon in our arsenals if we needed it. The truth is that gaslighting is a form of abuse, and abuse requires power, and, like, power is an inherently gendered thing, even in relationships.
Well, I think the point, this is why I distinguish like Gaslight from movies like Midsommar and Gone Girl, is that those two movies are kind of like fantasies. They're fantasies of this like heightened situation, whereas Gaslight is just a story about domestic abuse.
Yeah.
And that's far less sensational. What I'm getting at here is that it's a fantasy. Like, it's for women to kind of get some sort of catharsis out of this fictionalized situation in which they have the power to turn the tables and really get back at the people who have wronged them.
Yeah.
In a way that makes them look horrible, obviously.
It's the same way that, like, horror movies, because usually it's a woman who, you know, is the final survivor, and it's a woman who, like, ends up besting, like, a male villain. Those are cathartic for us. Rape revenge movies are cathartic for that reason. Like, it makes a lot of sense, and I understand the appeal. I mean, I'm drawn to those kinds of movies. I just get really scared that we start to believe that this is a woman who exists in real life. So we become so acquainted with this kind of fictionalized trope of a gaslighter, you know, a gone girl, that we see that first when we hear the word, and then the actual victims who need to use that word.
Those people can't use the word.
Yeah, those people can't use the word, and they'll get that same reaction, that eye-rolling reaction.
Although I do think that, again, it's that compounded with women themselves overusing the word to basically describe any interaction they've ever had in a situationship, you know what I mean? Like, it's that compounded with that. Like, when I think of gaslight, I don't immediately think of a woman manipulator. Like, I think of, like, a shitty fuckboy on the internet, kind of out there pretending that he likes me when he doesn't, which, again, is not what gaslighting is. So I feel like it's the two compounded that have made it a bit of a joke. I think, even going to what you're saying about the women becoming kind of the face of gaslighting, like, gaslighting is this kind of form of soft power that you can wield against your partner in a way that it feels like, yeah, women can easily become the face of it, because it's not this explicitly violent, like, physical act. And so that's kind of how you become the poster child of it, in a way. Like, women are known for their soft power. Mm-hmm. And when you look at any of these movies about powerful women, it's always like a woman who stood behind a man. And then
Lady Macbeth.
Like Lady Macbeth, like, kind of pulling the strings, letting him get his hands dirty, but by pulling the strings behind him. Totally. And that kind of feels like what that narrative has become, which is interesting.
Yeah, which kind of brings us into a very recent example where I think that this framework of thinking about gaslighting and, like, emotional manipulation as being, like, a specifically female thing really played a big factor. So we are going to talk about the Johnny Depp and Amber Heard case. This is a case that made me very, very emotional, very upset.
I hate thinking about it.
It's
also currently on my YouTube, like, page. In one of my fun facts, it says, Maya thinks Johnny Depp is an abuser and she believes Amber Heard. And I was like, I don't need this to be a part of my identity that I thought that Amber Heard was wrong in this trial. Like, that's an opinion I have, but it's not, like, who I am. It's just such a landmine of a topic.
And it's just so depressing that this is something you even have to feel scared about being an opinion associated with you. Like,
yeah.
But yeah, we were so quick to assume, like, Johnny Depp was the one and only victim in that case because people didn't like Amber Heard's vibe. And it didn't matter how much evidence she had. It didn't matter if people corroborated her stories or, you know, just the fact that she was a younger, less wealthy, less powerful woman in that relationship. It just didn't matter. She seemed bitchy and everybody had seen Gone Girl too many times.
Like, yeah, it truly was the Amy Dunnification of a real person.
Like, I just don't think you can separate the effect, yeah, of that movie and the kind of media that it represents, even if that's not the intention of the media. I like Gone Girl a lot.
Yeah, and the reason I say it's the Amy Dunnification is just that concept of the fact that it's so much easier for society to believe that a woman is, like, this psychotic, evil, calculating freak who's willing to, like, calculate years of domestic, like, forged domestic abuse photos and lies and, like, write things down in her phone and timestamp it, like, the way Amy Dunn does it in the movie.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, that
rather than, like, the mundane reality that a man might just abuse a woman.
And the thing about Gone Girl is Gone Girl allows women to feel like their pain, you know, of being cheated on or just mistreated by a partner is as valid as something like murder, because it's a cathartic experience. You get to like feel like this is being valued because it's so undervalued.
How do we make him
time?
Suffer as much as he made me emotionally suffer, right?
Yeah.
How do I see him suffer? He won't feel bad about this, so I'm gonna make him suffer.
It's like hyperbolic, but it's just like it's an outlet for that pain to have someone go, yeah, the fact that you got cheated on sucks. You should ruin this man's life.
And still at the end of the movie, you're still like, oh, Amy Dunn's a little fucked up. Like, you're not gonna come out of the movie being like, Amy Dunn wrong for doing that. With Amber Heard, it just felt like,
why would she, what would her reasoning be for this, really, except that she's like crazy and evil?
It was very clear that actually the abuse was coming from the opposite direction, and it was so hard for people to believe that because Amber Heard at different times didn't act, you know, properly, or didn't act the way that a victimized person would, and so it's hard for people to perceive her as one.
This ties also into gaslighting because, I mean, this is somebody with facts in front of us telling us her story and being told that's fake. You made that up. You planted that evidence. You constructed this whole narrative. And does not matter how you explain yourself, you're explaining yourself wrong. Like, the way you're expressing your grief or emotion, that's incorrect. Your feelings aren't real. Everything that you are telling us is fake. I mean, that is gaslighting.
Well, I just think when the public decides that they don't like someone, most often a woman, nothing she does will correct the situation.
Oh, no.
Everything she says and does will be fit into the narrative of being a crazy bitch. On The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills during the reunion. So basically, do you want to explain what happened on The Real Housewives?
Yeah, we've been watching a lot of season 10 of The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills to like cope with our winter depression. And it is a crazy season. Denise Richards gets accused of having an affair with a former castmate, and she's saying, no, I didn't do it. And they're all like, well, she said, and she's not a liar. You're a liar, Denise. You're manipulative. And Lisa Rinna somehow gets it in her head. Denise, it's not only that she's just not being honest with them, it's that she's been manipulating their entire like 20-year friendship. And she goes on the reunion and...
First of all, in the reunion, it's just this pile on where all these like wenchy, horrible women, like evil crones. Sorry. That show makes me so misogynistic.
Reality TV is our outlet.
It's my outlet to be misogynist. Anyways, all of these horrible, horrible, despicable women are piling on Denise Richards. Basically, anytime she tries to defend herself or back herself up, they're like, yeah, right, Denise. Yeah, fucking right, that's what's really going on. Yeah. You're a whore, Denise. Like, you've been a whore in popular culture for so long. How could you possibly not be a whore in this situation?
And even Garcelle, who we love, is like, Denise isn't defending herself properly. Denise, you're not standing up for yourself.
Denise,
like,
is fumbling the bag. You need to be stronger. And then when Denise is stronger, they're like, whoa, that was too strong, and the producers yell at her. So in the situation when Denise is defending herself, she defends herself at one point in the reunion episode, and Lisa Rinna goes, gaslight, gaslight, gaslight! You're gaslighting all of us!
And it's like...
And Anna and I were like, what the fuck?
We're like, the universe themes, you
this
know?
This woman found that word on her daughter's Instagram and just decided to take it and run with it, and that was crazy, because in the middle of her actually gaslighting and abusing Denise Richards... She accuses Denise of gaslighting her. It was like a gaslight inception.
I know. And it was just people telling this woman her version of events that she experienced just wasn't true. Oh, clearly we have a text message.
Well, every time she's like, no, guys, like, that's a lie. And you know what? I don't even know if it's a lie. Who the fuck cares who Denise Richards has slept with? I don't. And it's no one's business. But her saying that she didn't sleep with this woman, every time she says it, they go, Denise, we just want you to be honest with us.
Mm-hmm.
That is gaslighting, because the whole goal of this was to paint a very negative narrative of Denise, because they basically wanted her off the show.
I think it's very calculated.
That is a situation of gaslighting. I think that was an instance of gaslighting, and it does actually exist.
Gaslighting exists, and like, there's a reason that it became like a zeitgeisty buzzword. And there's a reason that it's had longevity. Like, it could have just been a word that we said for a year and then went away, but it's been around since like 2016. That's quite a while. And considering its long history and its usefulness, like, I don't think it's actually going to go away.
I think it's just going to like kind of get more and more diluted as the years go on.
Yeah, I think it's important that we don't let like the irony fueled runaway train of online discourse take it any further from its original purpose. I mean, what do you think? How do we deal with this? How do we, like, stop words from getting, like, more and more?
Honestly, it's just come down to something where I don't really like using one single word to label complex phenomenons anymore. I think it's useful in many cases, and we are going to actually talk about that in the gatekeeping episode.
Spoiler.
But I think that because the internet takes things and abstracts them so significantly from their original purpose, I actually at this point don't think it's useful to use one phrase to describe these phenomenons outside of the context of, like, a study, you know, especially in the realm of pop psychology. And I think that it's more beneficial at this point to describe the phenomenon happening in specific language, to be honest, because I just think that that's the only way to avoid having it be bastardized.
Yeah, I guess that's true. It's sad.
Is it sad?
I don't know. I feel I like words.
I like words, but this word particularly, like, it came from a this word came from a psychological thriller movie. It's not like a psychologist was using it, right? It's not actually that important of a word. It's not a verified word, and I don't think everything has to be, like, whatever filtered through some official institutional source, but
it's in the dictionary.
Like, I think it's important that we finally put a word to the phenomenon, but at the same time, gaslighting in the Gaslight movie, it's such a heightened literal way of doing it. Like, he walks in her attic upstairs and makes noises, and, you know, he literally drives her crazy, because the word oversimplifies a phenomenon that happens in a very subtle ways sometimes. I actually don't think that using a word that came from a movie that's so literal is actually that helpful to the situation. And that's why I think the word was so easily co-opted, is because I don't think that it really aptly defined manipulating your partner and breaking them down. And you know what I mean?
That is true. I mean,
I think it's a really common phenomenon too. The phenomenon of gaslighting.
Maybe we just shouldn't have, like, catchy words used to describe anything clinical.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, everything should just be really boring linguistically.
Yeah, call a tissue a tissue.
This girl is trying so hard to make her case for Kleenex. It was not an apt example.
It didn't hit.
Someone clearly didn't take an entry-level linguistics course like I did.
Yeah, that shit was so boring. I'm kidding. Linguistics is really interesting, and especially in these contexts, you know. Like, I'll use words in my videos that people were like, you don't actually know the origin of that word, and you should, and you didn't use it right. And sometimes it's like, shit just evolves. But when it comes to the internet, because things are moving so quickly, shit evolves so fast and so uselessly that it's just doing everything at a service.
Linguistics is cool.
And so is Kleenex.
Rehash is hosted by Hannah Rain and me, Maia. It's produced and edited by me, and the intro and outro song is produced by our talented friend, Ian Mills. Thanks for listening.